Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another wonderful Monday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern here, and yeah, it's raining out, but hope we'll put a little bit of sunshine in your heart with our show tonight. As we explore the wonderful world of brevities, the art, the witty art of saying so much in so little words. And I hope you had a great Easter weekend, everybody. And how are you tonight, Ed? How was your Easter?
It was great. We had grandkids over and the kids, and the weather was pretty nice. It was warm out.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So did you have a... My mom always used to have ham for Easter, I think. Was that what you had?
Yeah.
Or
we had ham and turkey. We had both, yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow. Fill the bellies.
Oh,
and
yeah.
How about you, Barb? How was your Easter?
It was fabulous. Our son drove down from college in Indiana, so... it's a 9-hour drive for him, but it was so nice to have him. And we also had ham, so I feel bad for all the pigs of the nation. We ate a lot of them this weekend.
four little oink oinks.
That's right. The three little pigs and now the two little pigs.
That's it. So that was wonderful to have your son down. Oh, my gracious. You must see him just like for the holidays, summertime.
Yeah, not very often. So it was, we definitely just soaked him in for a couple of days.
That's it, eh? Well, he must have enjoyed mommy's food, mommy's meals, and, you know, all the food for sure. When they're away like that. Yeah, when they're away like that, eh? Sometimes they don't eat that well. Between the studying and everything else, yeah, I know what it is. I went to college in a big city. We were from the country, so they shipped me off. We get shipped off early here. We get shipped off at age 16 to college, so that's kind of too early, I find. Yeah, yeah. If you don't skip a grade and you finish on time, you finish, you're 16 years old. So that's early, you know, to be shipped off into a big city when you're from the country and you don't even know how the bus system works. And I was like, oh, my gracious. My mom never even showed me how to make my bed.
Wait. Naomi, you're telling me you never made your bed until you were 16 and out of the house?
No. I worked as a maid, and when I was a teenager, a chance I did. I worked as a maid for this rich couple. You know, we had this place in the country near the ocean in this bay called Metz's Beach, and there was all rich folks from all over had these great big mansions. There was even the cousin's, the queen's cousin, the Queen of England, her cousin had her cottage in that bay. So it's just to tell you, you know, like the people that lived there and all these big mansions. So one year I was a nanny and I was looking after two kids. And the year after I was a maid, they hired me as a maid. Another couple, an older couple hired me as a maid and they taught me to cook spaghetti and make a bed really on a dime. You know, you could, and really like in the army, how to fluff the cushions and yeah. So
what a fabulous experience. That's really cool.
The bell, you know, they had the bell, the little bell that they'd ring, and I wanted her to make her swallow that bell from time to time. But, you know, it was really, quite an experience indeed, you know, where you see, you know, the rich, the life of the rich and the famous, oh, my gracious, yeah. So that was quite an experience.
Very cool.
So, yeah. So, are we ready to get this show rolling on the road?
I think so.
Are you
so
ready, Bob?
we're going to see. We are. Yeah. I'm going to try. I'm going to do my best. Let me see. Okay, I got one.
Okay.
Let me see if I can use it here. I think we're ready to go.
Okay, so what will be our first poem of the night, my dear?
It's going to be Continually Raining Her Origami Clouds by Shalini Krish.
Okay, and who would you like to read that?
Oh, I have all the power tonight.
you
read
do.
It? Why don't you read it, Naomi?
Okay. Continually raining her origami clouds, a pendulum screeching between collar bands of earth through palindromes on some narcissist scroll, embarks reclining with motionless eyes, an olive creases of t-shirts, bearing exhausted full stops, proud kings and queens among shuffled cards, losing sequence and speech as directions toss. Chemical tornadoes sleeping sound and calm, hearing sensorial chants of ancient shepherd songs. Stimulants have lost to wooden paintings blank, no covenant broken, yet she withdraws inside. One or two ravens visit sometimes, inverted eruptions from sky baiting life. The road have abandoned her shaft this side, continually raining her origami clouds and foam. And what an amazing writer. Shalini, what an amazing writer she is. And what did you think, Ed, of this write?
It had many metaphors that went well with the poem. And the last part of the poem I enjoyed, the write with the chemical tornadoes, sleeping sound and calm hearing, centurial chants of ancient shepherd songs. I thought the meaning of that came out very well in her write compared with the prompt. And the metaphors just sprung out on you. And I really enjoyed it. And she did a lovely job on this.
A wonderful comment, and I'm just looking up what prompt it was, and yeah, you know, the crouched over figure in the wooden box, looks like he's in a wooden cottage for sure. What did you think, Barb, of the write?
Yeah, it seems like Shalini was describing someone who has just kind of given up on life and is using substances to kind of numb the pain so they don't have to think about all the things that are wearing them down. And she used some really great descriptors and, you know, the whole embarks reclining with motionless eyes. It's like they've either taken drugs or alcohol to the point of not even being able to register, you know, sight. Bearing exhausted full stops, proud kings and queens among shuffled cards. It's like I'm wondering if she was meaning literally that she was playing solitaire, you know, at the coffee table, and then she's just losing sequence and speech. Like the more she drinks, the more she can't keep a full deck in every sense of the word. And then she tosses the directions entirely. I've got to think, because of the depth of the rest of the poem, that she's actually talking metaphorically, that she, there is no longer a full deck of cards, that the kings and queens have been shuffled right out of the deck, and she's left with nothing but deuces, you know? Yeah, I thought you did a great job bringing us into this state of absolute decay. Just giving up on life. And then, of course, Ed described, you know, the second stanza, which I thought was a little more clear in the intent. But having read the second stanza, it allows you to go back and, that's what she meant in the first stanza. So then you start reading it all over again, and it's a really a well-written piece with a lot of hidden meanings. So a lot of different readers will come at this from different directions and get what they need out of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I saw the same things as you, Barb, you know, the pain. I felt really the sadness and the pain and like she's completely lost. And she's, like you said, she's completely given up. And, absolutely brilliant, right? You know, very heartfelt, very emotional, a very emotional write. I really liked, you know, the part where she says, yet she withdraws inside. One or two ravens visit sometimes. Inverted, you know, the ravens, like, you know, when you have a reference, the ravens, of course, you think of Edgar Allan Poe, Nevermore, Nevermore. And, you know, it has that feeling in the poem. So it goes, she goes on, inverted eruptions from sky baiting life. So, you know, that's they're baiting life. The roads have abandoned her shack this side, continually raining her origami clouds. So, you know, the even the rain, you know, the roads have abandoned her shack, and the rain is coming down on her origami clouds there, her clouds that herself have created. So she has, like you said, you know, playing solitaire and losing her way, you know, like a metaphor for losing her way, either for drugs or either for, you know, whatever, depression or whatever. She's losing she's losing herself in the origami clouds, which she is making, you know, because you make origami, and even the rain is coming down on what she's making. So an awesome, awesome poem, you know, very, very visceral and very emotive, evocative, and so well done. So bravo.
I think you said at an earlier show that you do origami. Do you not?
Yeah, I do. I do some. I learned it for my students in the classroom. Yeah, because they love doing it. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I can do a couple
of little things. Yeah.
Is that where you take a full sheet of paper and you just fold it until it becomes different characters?
Yeah. I can make the most complicated thing I can make is in two parts. It's a tulip, and it really, really looks like a tulip. Like the first part is the bulb of the tulip there with the petals, and then the second part is the stem with a leaf on the side. So, and you usually use special paper to do it. Like if you have the special paper, it goes better. But, you know, I use construction paper, you know, because you don't always have the budget to buy the real paper. So I just use construction paper. It's a little bit thicker and harder to fold, but, you know, it does the job. And so that tulip, I'm famous for that tulip. A lot of mothers still have that tulip in there, I'm sure, as a souvenir for Mother's Day.
Oh, that's awesome.
Our kids were in grade 5.
So now that I have a clearer understanding of origami, it adds a whole nother depth to her title, which then feeds right in to her poem, because it's like origami is something you create yourself, and it's like she has folded her life into nothing but clouds. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And where are we going next, Barb?
Well, I have up Alto Flutes and Rising Moons by Captain Kerr. And that Captain Kerr sounds like a guy, so why don't you take this one, Ed?
Okay. Alto Flutes and Rising Moons. Pearl in silk and satin folds, harps with string of white and gold, weaving dreams from ocean shores, a conscious whirling music soars. My hair sails wildly in the breeze on opal strands of sterling seas. I rest my ear and gently tune Alto's flutes and rising moons. Warm sands grasping neath the waves, organ pipes and sunken caves, baritones and lofty highs. Love I found and left behind all my dreams in satin folds, played my harps with string of gold. End poem.
And what an absolutely wonderful read that was, Ed. And what a beautiful write. Oh, my gracious. You know, this contest was full with so many writes. And like I say every time, I just hate judging. I love putting up contests. I love searching for prompts. And I love, creating contests, I do them, I do like 100 of them. But when it comes to judging, oh my gracious, I'd give that job to somebody else. Because, there's so many wonderful writes. And, this was one of them. Shalini's was the first one we read there was another one. And, how do you choose? Oh, my gracious. This had wonderful wordplay throughout. It was as rich as it was magnificent. I can't even take out, a favorite part because I just so loved it all the way through. The imagery was amazing. It had this sense of relaxation, and I love the sea, and I guess the lines, my hair sails wildly in the breeze, an opal strand of sterling seas. I rest my ear and gently tune alto flutes and rising moons. Just absolutely magnificent, this poem. What did you think, Barb?
Yeah, I thought you did a fabulous job reading that, Ed, because just the cadence, the more relaxed speed with which you read it was so perfectly in tune, I think, with the essence that Captain Kerr was searching for. It just felt like smooth silk, going over your mind. I have to agree with you, Naomi. It's a beautiful piece. One sentence really stuck out for me. Warm sands gasping beneath the waves. We've all stood at the shoreline and, the wave comes in and then when it recedes back out, it takes like a fistful of sand with it. And it's that crackle and that snap and that little bit of a tingle. And I've never thought of it as a gasp before, but I can totally hear it as a gasp now that it's been put in my mind. So next time I go to the ocean, that's all I'm going to hear is the gasping waves. There's so much, I have to say, pretty imagery here. It's soft and it's breezy. It's all the things that he or she uses as descriptors. As Jackie, so it's actually, that's the artist. So we don't know who Captain Kerr is, but anyways, it's so beautiful. And I love how they use the white and gold harp strings to start and to end the poem. I love when things are, bookended like that. Pearl and silk and satin folds, harps with strings of white and gold. And then she finishes, all my dreams in satin folds, played by harps with strings of gold. Basically uses almost all the same words, changes their order to get a completely different meaning, but enough of the similar meaning to just make it feel like they're twins. Really beautiful piece.
Absolutely. Well said there. Well said there, Barb. And Ed, what did you think of the poem, my dear?
I thought it was lovely. The texture, the flow, the rhyming, the rhythm. A poem like this made it easy to read and to have that rhythm with it. Because of how he had it structured, where others, sometimes it's very hard to get that rhyming and rhythm together. This was done fabulous, and it was it dealt so much with the ocean and all the meaning of it and the metaphors. It just you can see it in your mind, and when you go to the beach, like she said, she's going to be thinking of these words. I thought this was a lovely write.
Absolutely. Wonderfully said there. Yeah, me too. I really, it really stuck in my head, the images, the imagery, the wonderful imagery used throughout this poem. Just wonderful. There was something scintillating about this poem. I don't know. Beautifully. Wonderful comment there, Ed. And where are we going next, Barb?
We're going to In Between by Jessica C. Wheeler. And I suppose it's my turn, so I will read this one. In between, he lingers, lost and lonely, on a rootless road. He roams, not knowing from where he came or where he's meant to go. No light for him to follow, nor is there dark to dwell. He wanders a world washed of memory and color. Beyond his bleached oblivion, deep beneath the white, she remains, in shadows of departure, clutching his broken memory, holding tight to the life he lost, tangled in each heartbeat, her own, hangs on hold. She cannot let him go, shattered, stalled in stages, stuck in the shackles of a grief that will not let him go. End poem.
Wonderful, wonderful read there, Barb. And yeah, in between, oh my gracious, how many times have you felt, have we, well, some of us, like me, felt like this. You know, you're just stuck there, I think it, you know, lost and lonely, stuck in this relationship. You know, sometimes I often say to myself, I'm more lonely with somebody than alone, and that's pretty bad when you can say that, because you know you're stuck like he is in this poem, or she is, you know, they both are, you know, she can't let him go because maybe out of habit or because he's always there. And he can't he can't escape. He's like stuck. Well, I see this as a relationship. And, you know, it's such a deep, poignant ride of despair. You know, absolutely wonderfully written, shattered, stalled in stages, stuck in the shackles of a grief that will not let him go. So is it, you know, it could be in a relationship, like I said, or it could be a widow. It could be a widow, you know, that his wife has passed away and, you know, he's holding on to her memory. It could be that too. Depends from which angle you take it or, you know, how you relate to the poem, I guess. What did you think, Ed?
I thought it was, it's like a bleeding of grief with pain and suffering. The first stanza draws you in of this pain. He lingers lost, lonely, and routeless road. He roams knowing not from where he came or where he's meant to go. This is a lost soul. Either, like you said, it could be a love, after like a broken heart, or it could be someone who lost a loved one. Now, I was reading back here, and it talks about dementia can feel like purgatory. So apparently, it has something to do with that, which I could very understand this right of having dementia and losing everything.
Yeah.
And it's a painful illness that you don't even realize. Only the people that are around you and love you. So, yeah, from reading down here, and I saw that, yeah.
That's a great observation there. I didn't even see that. Oh, my gracious. You know, sometimes I read over a poem like two or three times, and I don't know, like my brain doesn't focus, you know. I have such a hard time sometimes, you know, my, of course I have ADHD or whatever you call it in English there, but, you know, I have to really zoom in, but I see that now. You know, somebody was Alzheimer's or dementia, like you were saying, Ed, and, you know, as you know, is not there anymore, you know, and she won't let him go because, you know, she still loves him. What did you think, Barb?
I think you don't give yourself credit for your intuitive interpretation of poetry, Naomi. So many times you are drawn to a stanza that is the exact same stanza I'm drawn to, and your insight to poetry is often spot on. And poetry, I think, is meant to allow each reader to interpret from where they're at in that moment. So I think you're a great interpreter of poetry. So I just want to start with that.
Thank you.
And two, oh my gosh, I am in love with the complexity and yet the subtle beauty of this poem. You can read this, as Ed mentioned, as someone who is suffering dementia and has lost part of who they are in their loss of their memories. You can read it as someone who has lost a lover and has lost that lover to a separation, a split, a departure of lives. Or you can read it as someone who has lost a significant other to death. Any one of those is true and honest and the truth of what she implied. But also, this is where I think she's so brilliant. You can read this as the woman remembering a man or a man having remembrances of a woman. Whoever is listening, I would love to do some homework with all y'all. And if I could read it once, assuming you're a woman who's having memories of some guy who you adore, and then reread the exact same poem, switch the roles. You're now the guy who is having memories of this woman you adore. And it will work both ways, just the way that she nuances the words. It's like he lingers. So now we're in the head of the woman. He lingers lost and, or wait a minute, no, this is the guy, is lingering lost and lonely on a rootless road. He roams not knowing from where he came or where he's meant to go. So we're assuming we are taking footsteps with the guy. But then it's like talking about the memory. It's a girl who's remembering her. But then a few stanzas later, it's like, she remains in shadows of departure. So now we're thinking, wait a minute, now we're in the guy's head, and this is a memory he's having of the girl. It's complicated, and yet it's simple. It just depends on the lens you want to read it from. Wow, like I'm blown away, honestly, with this poem. It's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. It won. I gave it the silver because I found it was just an amazing, amazing write by Jessica, for sure. Just amazing. And the amazing title, In Between. We are like in between. We're right in between with all these, like you said, Barb, all these different, you know, ways you can interpret it. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, so we're really there in between for sure. So bravo, Jessica. Wonderful, wonderful write for tonight. And what will be our next poem, Barb?
It is called Screaming by Betty Page. Why don't you give that a read, Naomi?
Okay. Whoops, I'm just going to connect my computer here because it says 15%. That's not good. Oh, boy. Okay, there it's connected. Okay, Screaming by Betty Page. Screaming, sitting on a train, screaming through none can hear me, hands screeched down windows, clawing, begging help, shrieking, sound chill to the bone on this train alone, with all my demons taunting, mocking, haunting me, minds filled with voices, must shut them all up, one by one I murder them, blood drips so slowly, leaving trails of blood, illuminated, glowing, I've become a ghost, sitting on a train, screaming through none can hear me, hands screech down windows, clawing, begging help, shrieking sound chill to the bone on this train alone, with all my demons taunting, mocking, haunting me, minds filled with voices, must shut them all up. One by one I murder them, blood drips so slowly, end poem. And oof, this is a, well, she says fantasy, love. But, you know, if you take it as an extended metaphor, oh, my gracious, you know, it's an extended metaphor for somebody who is in great anguish. And I don't know who has all these voices in their heads like I have often. And, you know, they're screaming there. And, you know, or something that has schizophrenia. Or you can just take it literally. But wherever you're coming from, this is a great rite of, you know, anguish. And a great dark rite by Betty Page. Very visceral language and straightforward, raw and gritty and dark and wonderful, right? What did you think, Ed?
This was an exciting turmoil in all her words. It deals with your inner feelings of the demons inside you of hearing voices. And maybe you don't have control. It could be a nightmare, something that you're dreaming about. It could be life of dealing with everyday living. This has a little bit of everything. And you know, Chris writes a lot of unique poems. And this is one unique poem that stands out. It's painful. It's scary. It has a little bit of gore and darkness in it. And it's a very well done poem. I enjoyed reading it. And I commend her on this.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful comment there. And Barb, what did you think?
Yeah, I think Chris did a fabulous job describing a nightmare we all hope we never have. That whole sense of helplessness, of knowing no one coming to your aid. To me, that was the most chilling part, screaming though none can hear me. I used to, when I was little, have dreams that I was being chased by horrible, horrible monsters. And I ran in slow-mo. And nothing I did would make me run any faster. And I would always wake up just before the monster caught up to me. But this brought me right back to those horrible days where, you know, you leapt into bed because the monsters were hanging out underneath. But in her case, she's obviously used that image that was part of the contest, where it's just the hands screeching down with the blood, the trail of blood off the fingertips on the window in the train. And the way she repeated stanzas, she did it in a way that you had just a vague, unconscious recollection of those words, having already tripped past your understanding. And before you know it, you're recognizing them, but she did it so well, it didn't seem annoying. Like, I've read this already. It was just so subtle and such a great poetic technique. It's almost like, you know, the demons are whispering in your mind and you, I've heard that before. Oh my gosh, I'm hearing those voices again. So a really interesting use of repetition. And I thought it was chilling, which is obviously the intent. And so kudos, mission accomplished. This was very chilling and very beautifully written at the same time, because you can totally get that sense of hysteria and fear from being trapped with your demons in a room where no one can hear you scream.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, both of you. We can tell, Ed, you really dig this poem. yeah, so great comments, both of you. And where are we going next, Barb?
Well, I'm just tapping them in. Since I was so busy yakking, let me get those posted. It's called Slow Fade by My Angels 3. You want to read that one, Ed?
Sure. Slow fade. Am I lost in the fade or simply fading away? Falling or failing down the rapid hole? Caught somewhere between an end and a mediocre beginning. Lost in an endless cycle that's endlessly repeating, my circle trapping me. I hear the calling singing to me with its sickly sweet voice, promising the world if I would only obey. This latest churn is unrelenting, but I refuse to let it be the end of me. I'll go on my terms, not push towards the edge of the abyss by those who will never understand. My blood won't be on their hands. End poem.
Amazing read there, Ed. And, you know, what a great, you know, a great poem on, I think, depression, you know, going around and around and around. This could be like, I don't know, I'm jumping to conclusions here, but bipolar disorder, it could be, you know, you're in that cycle of up and down and up and down and up and down, and you know, when you get into those downs, it's easy, you know. I think bipolar disease, well, here in Canada, it's one of the first causes of suicide. I don't know about in the States, the statistics of it. But so, you know, when she says, I'll go on my terms, not push towards the edge of the abyss by those who will never understand, my blood won't be on their hands. So, you know, she's not going to go that way. You know, she's not going to go pushed by somebody or pushed by this could be these sweet voices, these sickly sweet voices that are telling her, commit suicide, or, you know, to put an end to all this. She's saying, no, you know, my blood won't be on their hands. I'm going to go on my own terms. And in that way, she's, you know, she is lost in a fade, but she's fighting it. I see it in that way, but, you know, she's also lost in the whole thing. You feel that. You feel that she's lost. But whatever way, you know, the meaning of the poem is in the ending there, you know. However you interpret that ending is where it goes. How did you see the poem, Ed?
Well, you know, I thought it was... kind of disturbing at the beginning with the turmoil, but she has succeeded in life, and she's having control, something that is very hard to deal with, either depression or some other type of pain. And she's taken control now and handling it. And that's one of the most important things for depression, to know it and to understand it and then to deal with it. And this is explaining what she is doing from the beginning to how she is in control.
Absolutely. And I see that she has a very, very important quote there by Friedrich Nietzsche. Whoever fights monsters should see to it that in the process he does not become a monster. And if you gaze long enough into an abyss, the abyss will gaze back into you. So she put that quote in there, which is probably very important to the poem. And what did you think, Barb?
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that quote by Friedrich Nietzsche out, because it's really nuanced words there. If you gaze long enough into the abyss will gaze back into you, not at you, but into you. So you become that which you are gazing upon, which is just hollowed out, empty, nothing. I thought that My Angels did a fabulous job starting with a bunch of questions. I think there's some people hear voices, and voices I think are often commands like you're bad, you're useless, you're not worthy of anything. And I do think there are people who suffer from depression, and I agree with both of you. I do feel like this is about someone who's contemplating suicide as an option should she not succeed, to quiet the voices that say she has no value. And so it's that arm wrestle. It's that wrestling match with herself and her self-esteem. And I like that in this case she's using questions. So the person isn't just repeating the statements, the negative statements she may have heard in her life, but is still has a question mark. And to me, in this situation, when you're dealing with depression, a question mark offers a little bit of light to leak in to say, I'm not necessarily accepting your version of myself. I am still questioning it. Am I lost in the fade or simply fading away? She hasn't yet decided that she's no good. She's still questioning her value, which means she still thinks there's a chance that she has some. And then following or falling down this rabbit hole, again, a question like, can I get out of this hole? Or am I falling in a depth that there's no purchase? There's no way for me to crawl back out of it. Lost in an endless cycle that is endlessly repeating. So she's just fatigued. She's so tired of being tired, tired of being depressed, tired of not knowing who is going to win this battle, but determined that when that final decision comes, it shall be hers and hers alone. So there's an inner strength that she brings to the story. And I think it will ultimately be that inner strength that saves her. You know, the fact that we talk about this so viscerally, so hopeful for this narrator, just speaks to how much My Angel 3 has created a character that we can empathize with and care about and root for. I just thought it was a really well-crafted piece.
Absolutely. Me too. Yeah, it's so true. We do completely sympathize with the character here. Great comment, great observation, Barb. And so thank you, My Angel 3. And wonderful share. And where are we going next, Barb?
We are going to wait for me to tap this in. And we are going to The Puzzle of Life by Monty G. 25. And I think it's my turn. So I'll give this a read. The Puzzle of Life. Isn't life a puzzle? Which way to turn? Up, down, around? Have you got your colors lined up? Will your next move be right? Don't let it confuse you. You can do it. Just make one move at a time. It will take a while, but so what if it does? Are you in a rush? Do you have something better to do? And if you make a bad choice, go back. Try a different way. You will get it right eventually, and then it gets easier as every move falls into place. Bingo. The puzzle of life is solved. End poem.
I thought this was such a witty piece and such an intelligent written piece, a brilliant interpretation of the prompt indeed. You know, I just said bravo to them, taking the Rubik's Cube there and you know, spinning it into such an amazing brevity. Wow, on life and life's puzzling times and, you know, and even use the colors. Have you got your colors lined up? Will your next move be right? You know, because you move it right, you move it left. And then he goes in very spiritual and very meditative, right, I find, you know. Just take your time. Why the rush, you know? You have anything better to do than to solve the puzzle of your life? You know, that's what's most important, you know, for you. You know, and he states, and then it gets easier as every move falls into place. Every little action that you take to move forward in life gets easier and easier, you know. And I thought this was just brilliant. And like I said, such a hard contest to judge, my gracious. And what did you think, Ed, of this piece?
Basically, this is a lesson on taking your time. Think before you act. You know, we all should do this because there are so many mistakes that are made when we try to hurry up. And one mistake can add to more, and it could be a compounding effect. So he did a great job of this, and I think this would be good for in school to teach, of you know, for kids on how to understand, isn't life a puzzle? You know, right there, it is. You know, and you have to take one move at a time. And this is a great observation on living.
Absolutely. Wonderfully said there, Ed. And what did you think, Barb?
I love the metaphor that Monty G used in this. Have you guys ever tried a Rubik's Cube? Ed, have you?
I can't do it. I can't do it. I get too frustrated.
I can do two sides, but I can't get any further than that.
Yeah. So we have all tried it. So I love metaphors that everyone can relate to, and I think everyone can relate to the frustration of trying to figure it out. But what Monty G is trying to tell us is, hey, just enjoy the fluid movement of one step following another. Because there really is, there's kind of, you get into that Zen state and the click, 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 it actually becomes kind of a relaxing thing. And life can be relaxing if you just enjoy the journey, if you just enjoy turning that color wheel to see what sequence of colors pop up. And I think it's interesting that Naomi, you love to start where life is a puzzle and have you got your colors all lined up, and And it's so cool that you hooked on that. I hooked on, and if you make a bad choice, go back, try a different way. I think so many of us forget that just because we choose this path, it doesn't mean that we are condemned to stay on that path forever. And I think of people when they make their career choices or their boyfriend or girlfriend choices, it's like if you start seeing red flags or you start getting bored or you just, you're not enjoying life, find a different path. Take a few more moves of the color wheel and find a different route, find a different horizon, perhaps find different companions to travel with. And anytime I got close, which was never, to the full completion solving this Rubik's Cube puzzle, it's like two steps forward, three steps back. There's always that one color that doesn't match all the others. And then you have to do like 69 different moves to get back to where you can make it a complete color. So
absolutely.
There's so many backwards moves to get one color to match the rest. And so I think, and Ed, that's a brilliant idea. If they handed out Rubik's Cubes to kids in like fifth grade, when they're at that age where they can follow a metaphor and remember as they go through their high school and college and adult lives, they'll just always remember how hard it was to do the Rubik's Cube, and that's the game. So how hard is life? And you need to just enjoy the journey and give yourself grace if you have to switch paths. So I thought this was, I love the word, the descriptor you used, Naomi. It was brilliant. It's such a simple metaphor, but it works on every level. Really, yeah, good luck with, have you given goals and stuff out? Okay, good luck, Naomi.
Yeah, you actually won gold, Barb, in this contest. Jessica won the silver and the bronze. I forget who it was. We might tumble upon it as we're reading them, the carryovers. But these are actually the carryovers from the last contest.
Oh, right.
You won the gold.
Well, that makes it seem even way more special because, man, there are some amazing rites that we're enjoying tonight.
Absolutely. And what will be our next one, Barb?
Our next one is Leaking by A.R. Mundell. Did you want to read that one, Ed?
Sure.
And that's the bronze. They're right there.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, leaking. My mind unhinges, torrenting my thoughts into the clouds. They swim about as schools of fish. Some goldfish glow, some trouts. And all the thoughts which spill from me compel my mind to fly. As I watch them all out swirling free, fins flashing in the sky.
Ah, what a beautiful read that was, Ed. And you know, what a wonderful write from Amy. I just love the she captivated me right from the title, Leaking. You know, my mind unhinges, torrenting my thoughts into the clouds. They swim about as schools of fish. Some goldfish glow, some trout. And I really, you know, was hooked with the flow and the rhythm of the whole piece, you know, as I went down throughout it. I really loved this. She really captured your emotions here so well and transmitted them to the reader. This was a brilliantly written, so much. What did you think, Barb?
Yeah, I thought she did a fabulous job of mixing a metaphor of fish who swim and the sky, and using the sky as the big puddle in which, or the big lake or ocean in which they all swim, and that those creatures that are swimming are actually her thoughts that are leaking out of her mind. I thought it was just a really beautiful, tight package that I quite enjoyed. And she even enjoys watching all of her thoughts swim up in the sky. And as I watch them all out swirling free, fins flashing in the sky, it's kind of cool to think about emptying your mind in a very real way and having those thoughts fly up into the sky and swirl around. And just like sort of to be able to do an out-of-body experience with your thoughts, to be able to separate yourself from your thoughts, I think that's actually a really useful exercise. Because we get so attached to our thoughts that we can't kind of sort through and figure stuff out. But I think if we were able to let them leak into the sky and look at them from a third dimension, I think they would all start to align and make sense. You'll see how one thought doesn't work with another. You know, got a couple of fighting fish up there, or you can see them school and pool and start to coordinate and cooperate, and maybe then you start getting to some solutions to things that are bugging you. Or maybe it's just another inventive way of finding characters in the clouds on a cloudless day. It just had so many wonderful, calming images go through my mind. I really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. I'm putting up the prompt because I thought it was such an accurate description, an amazing write to that prompt. And I'm putting it up in the LNT room. I don't know if it got there. Oh, no, I put it in another room. I put it in the Brevity Writers, the BW room. Yeah, so that was the prompt. If you see the picture there, that's the prompt that she wrote.
Yeah.
So brilliantly exploited that prompt to the maximum. So, and I guess, Ed, did you comment?
No, not yet.
Okay. Go ahead, my dear.
I agree so much with Barb. You know, you empty your mind. And to do this, you will understand and learn more about yourself and life. And this is almost like martial arts, what I teach. You have to empty your mind. And here at the last two stanzas, and all the thoughts which spill from me compel my mind to fly. Now think about that. You are emptying everything, like the stress, everything. And now your mind is going to indulge itself and learn what's out there. And this is what I get. And it says, as I watch them all out swirling free, fins flashing in the sky, there's a glow. Your mind is exploring and learning. And inside it gets bigger and bigger. And that's what I feel from this write. It was done very well. And it's a very good understanding on the term in martial arts or anything. It's called the way, and that's empty your mind.
Interesting. Wonderful observation. Wonderful comment there and input, Ed. Wonderful. And so amazing write by Amy for sure to that prompt and wonderful comments, both of you. And where are we going? Hi, Anne on the board. I don't know if she's listening in. But where are we going next, Barb?
Well, first I wanted to thank Ed for your last comment. I never thought of that, but that whole thought that a mind that's leaking is a mind that is emptying itself, that's a great concept. I love that. So, yeah, thank you for putting that in my mind.
Thanks.
Yeah. So our next beautiful poem is called Rubric Ruminations by Abstract One. Do you want to read that one, Naomi?
Okay. Oh, boy, it's full. Okay, I'll try. Rubric ruminations, twisted turns, piled up rotations, a mental seizure, an amalgamation of acrylic rookies, rubric ruminations, hinged on manual makers, mind-numbing mental calculations. End poem. I really like this one. And the way it was shaped, too, awesome. And, and another right, you know, to that Rubik's Cube, which captured the art perfectly, and an awesome, masterful usage of words in this piled-up rotation, twisted turns. I really like that. You know, a mental seizure. And now amalgamation of acrylics, rookies. And I really like that play on words right there. Wonderful write by Abstract One. And I think he has the name to go right with this write, Abstract One. He has the perfect name. And what did you think, Ed, of this poem?
It was a tongue-twisting poem, and you did a lovely job reading it. You know, I said, this sounds like my life. I enjoyed reading it because it's a mental calculation of living, of dealing with all the turns in life, all what's in front of you. And, you know, with these few words, this is it. This is like a Rubik trying to straighten everything out in your life. It was a great job with a few words.
Absolutely. Wonderfully said there, Ed. And, it was like a mental calculation and a tongue twister to read for sure. And what did you think, Barb, of the write?
Yeah, I agree with you, Naomi. I love the look of this because it looks like a Rubik's Cube in mid-spin, you know, where you're just twisting and turning it. So he did a good job of getting a visual representation of his verbal poem. And I really loved the concepts that he has in his third from last line, where the ruminations are hinged on manual markers. It's like everything we do in our life, it's like we're hinged around some kind of a pivot point. And I think people who are able to think outside of the box just have a more free flow life. They have so many more options available to them. But since this is describing what most people live with, we all live hinged on a pivot point. You know, we can turn and we can mash our colors up and we can change our path, but we're just hooked. We're kind of stuck in that central axis that limits our life, limits our choices. And he did a fabulous job just using that sentence, hinged on manual makers. Oh, makers, not markers. Hinged on manual makers, mind-numbing, mental calculations. It's like we go through all these, like we have three paths in front of them. Which do we take? Let's do a pros and cons. Why should I? Why shouldn't I? It's mind-numbing, the opportunities that even on a hinged life that has but one pivot point, the different sequence of events we can invite into our lives are unlimited. And so it really is mind-numbing trying to sort through that and choose your best life, always worried that the life you didn't choose was the better one. How much energy do we waste on what could have been? And I think he did a great job, you know, and that's mind-numbing. It's absolutely mind-numbing going over and over, am I making the right choice? Down to buying a refrigerator. Is this the right refrigerator? I don't know. Let me Google it one more time, read one more
Absolutely.
Review. So I think Abstract One did a great job of making this not so abstract. And for me, it all hinged on that word hinged. I got so much meaning out of that one word. It's one of many reasons I love poetry, because words matter. And he certainly got a lot of mileage out of that one for me. So a really clever write.
Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant write. Awesome addition for tonight. And where are we going next, Barb?
Well, we are going. I'm just going to enlighten all you on the screens here. We are going to One Has to Stop When the Signal is Red by Sinhario Biswarup. Is this me? I guess this is my turn. Okay. One has to stop when the signal is red. Just about to stop, the red signal from heaven, some cubits away, the man does not want to look up to behold. Time acts as real in the hand of Lord. The conveyed message to the man through real compels everyone to adhere and stop. Life was in full swing, was free to rain the mundane sky. Now the heaven's pull is too strong to escape. All illusions are left lacerated on earth. The blue hours are mingled up into one, so every decimal moment is sacred to step into new abode. End poem.
I really liked the last, that was a beautiful read, by the way, Barb. But I really liked the last lines of this poem. You know, the blue hours are mingled up into one, so every decimal moment is sacred to step into new abode, a new abode, which I think is, you know, like a home. And wonderful write to the artwork there. The way he interpreted the artwork and used the colors red and then blue, very artistically creative, the way he put together this awesome, awesome brevity. What did you think, Ed?
Excuse me. Sometimes we don't realize how fast life goes, and we have to look around and see what is going around and how lucky we are. You know, right here it says life was in full swing and was free to rain the mundane sky. Now the heaven's pull is too strong to escape. All illusions are left lacerated on earth. So it's like dealing with some of the problems, but we have to realize, we have to slow down, and again, we have to understand ourselves, again, within one, you know. And it says all illusions, you know, are left lacerated on earth. And it almost seems like, is he going to heaven? The blue hours are mingled up into one. Is he going into the clouds? You could get a lot of different meanings in this, right? I told him it's, you know, how blessed and lucky to be alive that we are. And that's what I got out of this poem of what we have to deal with. And the understanding and being still alive. Every day something is happening, and we are lucky to be here and talk about this. So that's
absolutely
what I got.
Wonderful, wonderful interpretation. And I put the prompt, the artwork, the prompt up in the room in the. Which room did I put it up in? I put it up in Brevity Writers again. Yeah, you know, it's the, you see the earth there, or what I don't know if it's the earth or the moon. Maybe it's the moon, red, anyway, or another planet, and the man, you know, walking. So there's the, you see the blue, you see the red, And he's walking like hunched over with a kite, you know, floating behind him. So if you want to ever glance at that artwork, it's there. And what did you think, Barb, of this rite?
Well, first of all, thanks for putting that image up. I was totally not, I was totally like lost in my own la-la land. This was not the image. I thought he was like at a stop sign, a stoplight. And when I read real, I was thinking probably because of, you know, a few palms back, there were fish. I was thinking of a fishing reel. And I was thinking, even though he did not use capital letters for heaven or Lord, I was seeing this as a faith-based poem. And I was seeing that, you know, God was saying, no, this street you're on, this road you're on, no, you need to go back. I am reeling you in for your own good. I'm reeling you in. You may not proceed. You have a red light here. Stop. It's danger past here, and I care about you. I'm reeling you in. But when I look at the image, it says that it was the Lord who was reeling. So it was the Lord who had that string of the kite. And in this image, it's actually the man who's holding the string or has control of the reel of that kite. And so perhaps the message is we are Lord of our own lives. We get to decide how much string we're going to give our dreams, what direction we're going to have that kite fly. But we're still seeming to, the main narrator just doesn't want to see this big, massive red image in front of him. He's kind of in denial over something that's happening in his life. But I thought there were just a lot of beautiful images. No matter what image you conjure up in your own mind, it all works. And I do love the passages you guys also camped on, which is, now the heaven's pull is too strong to escape. All illusions are left lacerated on earth. Yeah, it was a beautiful poem with a lot of really deep meaning, honestly.
You know, excuse me. You know, the photo is him walking on the edge of waterfalls. So, you know, do you see that? Either he's going to drop, and so it goes well with the right, you know, and the kite can be actually his goal or holding it for him to ascend instead of descend.
Yeah, I didn't scroll down. I didn't see the bottom of the image. So, yeah, totally.
Absolutely. Great observation there, Ed. Absolutely. Wonderfully said. Wonderfully pointed out. And what will be our next rite?
The next rite is Cat Cradle Secrets by Fran Marie. Did you want to read that one, Naomi?
Okay. Cat Cradle Secrets. Caught in your catch, all cradle, falling through the cracks, crazy as Godiva, riding bare on a white stallion through gossiping streets of accusations. Look, there she goes, harlot, pointing fingers with snide remarks. I'm but a puppet amusement for you, pulling my strings as you please, a pastime of pleasures as you lock me in a tangled twine of indiscretions and backdoor rendezvous, cat cradle secrets of a married man. End poem. And what an absolutely amazing interpretation of that prompt. Oh, my gracious. You know, I was completely blown away by this interpretation here. We're starting the new contest right now, I guess, Fran Marie, starting that new contest on the art of The Art of Ranka Andrava. And yeah, so this was one of the prompts, one of her artworks. And so yeah, amazing right here by amazing interpretation by Fran Marie. And you know, to see that woman on that horse, to see her as a, you know, as God Diva, the goddess riding a bear on a white stallion, and you know, fingers being pointed at her, and being it all being related back to the secrets of her. Of her entanglement with a married man, you know, with a married man there. So amazing, I thought, was a unique and amazing. Very creative. What did you think, Ed?
Well, you read the last, at the bottom, she sees herself caught in her lover man's cradle of deceit. Just a plaything for his own pleasures. And I said, your poem fits the prompt, you know, well. And, you know, this last stanza, I'm but a puppet, amusement for you, pulling my strings as you please, a pastime of pleasures as you lock me in a tangled twine of indiscretions and backdoor rendezvous. Cat cradle secrets of a married man. That is very true, right, and very understanding that she brings out here in this poem, and it goes so well with the prompt picture of how she is tangled up in this this web, and she wants to stay in there or not. It's like a very hard decision for her about being with this person because it is a secret, and she doesn't know what to do.
Absolutely. Wonderful. She's like a puppet there, right? And wonderfully said there. One wonderful comment, Ed. And what did you think, Barb?
Yeah, I like the way Fran Marie didn't really give us a clear image of what's going on until the last two words. This is an indiscretion with a married man. So her future is really, she's walking a tightrope. There's not much future for her because she truly is just a plaything of a married man who obviously seems like he's not going to walk the tightrope for her. And I find it interesting the use of the word cradle. I'm wondering if that's a nod to the age of the play person. You know, is this a young, innocent person who's had their innocence taken? And did she just listen to all the beguiling lies of this married man filled with promises? And is she now seeing that they are, in fact, just lies? And now she's just starting to get really wounded by all of that. And it must be very difficult to hear the look. There she goes, harlot, and having all those pointing fingers with snide remarks, you know, pointed in her direction. And I think at some internal place, she knows it just feels dirty, right? To be the center of that kind of gossip and to discover that all those sweet promises were never had any substance or true intent behind them. That must be just a horrible place to be in. And I thought Fran Marie did a fabulous job just weaving this story from that image. You can just feel the anguish of the person that's caught in this web of deceit. Yeah, really well written.
Absolutely. Wonderfully creative. You, you know, interpretation, like I said, of that prompt. So brilliantly done. And where are we going next, Barb? Hello?
Sorry, I muted myself because I didn't want you to hear the tap, tap as I put these on the boards. I'm sorry. We're going to Instrument of Pleasure by Rodrigo 22. Did you want to give that a read, Ed?
Sure. Let me see here. Okay. Instrument of Pleasure. Sitting in bare contemplation, longing for his tantalizing touch, to be his desire instrument within his strong grasp, feeling his tender strumming of her sensual strings, deep reverberations building within her body to his artful melody. She fantasized about his fingers stroking her smooth skin, his masterful manipulations of her chords of elation, his percussive pounding resonating with her racing heart. She desperately desired their blissful union for the rapturous release of her unbridled passion. End poem.
Oof, that was hot. That was a steamy one. Steamy one that got in there. Well, I guess if you take the picture, right? And that was a brilliant read, my gracious Ed. Oof. And he used the prompt well. Oh, my gracious. You know, she's holding what do they call that in English? Those violoncelle. I don't know. What is it in English?
A violin?
Cello?
Is it,
well,
a
it's
violin
bigger
or
than
a cello?
A cello. That's it. That's it. Violoncelle in English and French. And you know, the way she talks about the fingers stroking her smooth skin, you know, as referring the instrument. He's using the instrument, the cello as a metaphor here. And what a wonderful, well, Rodrigo is known for his art of seduction, right? And he didn't pass on a chance to pop one in here in this brevity show and spice things up a bit. So you go, Rodrigo. Instrument of Pleasure. And Ed, I bet you like that one.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's a deep sensual feel for both, a longing effect, intense pleasure. It's extreme pleasure that they need, that they fantasize about being with each other or with her or him. This passion is tantalizing. And the way he wrote this, it's not dirty. It's a little bit of excitement. Anyone could basically read this, except under, you know, like 14. But, you know, it's a great poem that it's not dirty. It just lets your mind think. And that's what he has here. And he did a fantastic job with this, right?
Absolutely. It's elegant sensuality. That's what it is, eh? Very elegantly written, for sure, you know. Great choice of words. Like, he uses percussive, you know, like, you know, the percussion, you know, like you use in music. So the strumming you use in music, you know, and he uses the words that have to do with music throughout the poem. So very well done indeed. What did you think, Barb?
I had to laugh though, Ed, when you said that it was a a thoughtful mind thing, because it had Naomi and me giggling and tee-heeing. So there's a little bit more than just mind play going on. definitely a sensual right. And full disclosure, you know, these sorts of poems are making me realize I'm a bit of a prude. I was sitting here with my window open, and of course this is the exact moment my neighbor's taking his trash out. And so what did I do? I turned down the volume on my phone so he couldn't hear you reading the poem, and I closed my window.
I was reading it to you.
Oh my gosh. So yeah. So okay, when my heat leaves my cheeks, I will continue. It was really well written, but I was so flustered with trying to not have it all escape the confines of my room that I only heard every third line, but they were good. They were good.
So funny.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
We'll have to have you on Artist Seduction.
There are reasons you don't see me on the board those nights. Full disclosure.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness. I'm not that old, but some parts of me, I guess, are. But I
Do you need some ice?
Yeah, the wrinkles go all the way to my psyche, yes. But I loved the points that you brought out, Naomi, how Rodrigo used instruments and music, you know, the strumming, the pounding, the reverberations, and even reverberations building, like a crescendo that you often hear in classical music, the stroking, manipulation, as, you know, the artists manipulate. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the poem we just read, the girl talked about being an instrument, like a plaything, but in a very different way, you know, because she was being taken advantage of. But in this case, the same set of words is used to show a consensual adult interplay of romance and love and sensuality. I just thought he did a great job matching his storyline, his moment of sensuality with that image. And, just carried the reader to whatever place they wanted to go to. Really well written for those of us who are allowed to read every word.
Absolutely. Good job, Rodrigo. You made Barb flush.
Blush.
So where are we going next, Barb?
I'm not finished with that one. No, I'm just okay, so let me see. My husband's in the other room. We may reread that later.
That's it.
Okay, I just got it on the board. So our next one is Bird Brain Space by Yorkie Buff. And I am flustered. I don't know whose turn it is.
I think it might be mine. So want me to go ahead and read it?
That'd be perfect.
See, you ladies, you can't concentrate now.
I'm tapping out.
And what a perfect title, Bird Brain Space.
Yeah.
Bird Brain Space by Yorkie Buff. Safety in numbers, beating loneliness, intricate edifices made without hands, dyed leaf greens, camouflaged, scaffolding supporting, rustles of twig hunters using softest lining, packed into shape with sprayed spittle glue, couple above edifice, food scout on the wing, gratefully received, unused stuffing at roots, teasing beehives into honey-dipped combs of muddled third eye space filled with last year's wool, below rolled curls set in, geriatric, well-ordered rows. End poem. And wow, what a wonderful, you know, what a deep, what a deep poem, a poignant poem. What are your thoughts, Ed?
Well, it is deep, and you know, from reading the last one and then this, it was a continuation of my thought, and I said this is a complex hunger for both a desire and need. For more, an enjoyment or a wild rendezvous. And he goes, interesting interpretation, thank you. So I think that was a little fall off from the last poem, but that's what I got out of it. It was enjoyable.
Amazing observation there. No opinion is wrong. So, you know, when you're reading poetry, it's whatever you get out of it, you know, that counts. You know, it's how you impact the reader. What did you think of this one, Barb?
Well, I've never had someone write me a poem before, but apparently Yorkie did, because read the last line, geriatric. Geriatric, well-ordered rules. So this is my geriatric poem. But what I see, honestly, is a really pretty poem about, you know, birds nesting. And then he ties that into nesting into this woman's curls, into her mind, into her being. But it's like safety in numbers, beating loneliness. So I see he's using the metaphor of birds nesting for this woman, just how she thinks, how she navigates life. It seems like she doesn't want to be alone. So she has a flock of birds in her mind that are nesting and giving her safety in numbers, beating her loneliness. So perhaps she has like imaginary friends, because it's just too scary to go out into the world on her own, and that they're making intricate edifices. You know, edifices are walls. So these birds in her mind are building up walls, and of course made without hands because birds don't have hands. Dyed leaf green, camouflage, scaffolding supporting. So I'm getting that she is struggling with who she is and who her place is in the world. And so these birds in her mind are putting up scaffolding without, they have no hands, but they are just building a nest, which is actually an edifice. It's her wall. It's her protection. It's also her company and her comfort. And then wrestles of twig hunters, of course. And when you're a twig hunter, you have to leave the safety of your net to go and search for twigs. And then you have to bring them back. So she has to go out into the big bad world and find something that she can use to protect herself as she continues to build her nest, to build her wall, build her protection from that world. So it really is a very scary thing. And I think a lot of people face that. You know, they have to live in the world, but they want to be apart from the world. So they have to go in the world to find those little bricks that can help build the wall to protect them. I thought it was a very thought-provoking poem.
Mm-hmm. You finished that, right? You don't finish
I know, because I was like, honestly, I was going to go to the next stanza and do as detailed, and I'm like, I got to leave something for them. I'm like, because I wanted to continue. I'm like, I got to stop myself. I'm like sitting on my hands, So yeah, you're right. That is so intuitive, you. It was very abrupt for me to stop like that.
In the middle of writing a comment, I was like, "Oops, she's finished." But yes, this does bring to mind nestling. Can you say that in English? Say nestling. Nesting.
Well,
Nestling, you don't say that. You say that?
No, nestling.
Nesting.
But that's the baby bird. Yeah. A nestling is a baby bird.
Oh, okay. Just learned something. My gracious.
Yeah.
You know, when you're French. You know, when you're French. So, yeah, it does bring to mind nesting, or it could bring to mind also, you know, Anne's interpretation too, you know. So that's the beauty of poetry. And where are we going next, Barb?
I'm just going to put them into the spaces so y'all can follow me. We are going to Equinox by Margaret. And it's probably my turn, so I'll read this. Equinox. No sun to blaze. No wind to blow, the earth in equilibrium, this ash gray morning, summer's dust laid to rest, as trees rain gold and crimson, dark equals daylight, halfway to winter solstice, and all is in balance. End poem.
What a beautiful poem that was. And do you take that prompt, the ballerinas, you know, dancing on the electric wires there from pole to pole, you know, the earth in equilibrium, this ash gray morning, summer's dust laid to rest, as trees rain gold and crimson. He brings out the gold and crimson that is in most of these paintings, and I think this is what attracted me to that artist, is her coloring. You know, I thought there were wonderful colors, that usage that she used throughout her artwork. And to bring up the winter solstice there was just amazing, the way she played with nature. And she played. And what did you think, Ed?
Reading the bottom here, it says, here in the South today, the 20th day of March, it is the first astronomical day of fall. This plus the autumn palette of Radka. Okay, so they're getting a total different view, and I felt this is a balanced state of life. The summer's longest day to the winter's shortest day, but could be comfort in the times of turmoil. It's like the yin and yang concept. Again, what I got out of it, you know, the equals of both sides, good and bad, dark and light, balances everything out. And that's what I got out of this, right?
Yeah, that's amazing. A great juxtaposition there used. And yeah, I see that, Ed. Yes, absolutely. Wonderful comment. And what about you, Barb? What are your thoughts? Are you on mute, Barb? Did we lose Barb?
I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I when I did End Poem, I hit the wrong button and I hung up the phone.
Oh.
So I called back in, and I guess it just took a bit for me to actually get back in. I'm sorry.
No
rookie.
Problem.
um, No, I thought it was a beautiful poem. And once again, you guys reading the author's notes was very instructive for me, because it let me know that the intent was, it was actually a story about fall and about, you know, the shortening of the day, and that, you know, mornings are becoming ash gray, no sun to blaze. So the heat of summer is over. The earth is in equilibrium. And the thought or the interpretation I had was, because the earth is in equilibrium, this writer feels in equilibrium, just feels that they can pause and relax and balance. They feel like their life is balanced. The world, their world, is balanced. And they seemed happy that they're halfway to winter solstice and all is balanced. So there's definitely the through line is that things are good. Things are as they should be. I'm feeling I'm on an even keel. Nothing is going awry. Life is good. And it has that feel, that calm, slow feel to it, the way they broke up their stanzas and had short lines and longer lines. I just found it a really soft, peaceful piece.
Absolutely. Yeah. And works so well, eh? Like I said, with the colors that the artist used in the artwork, just absolutely beautiful, you know, most unique and creative and brilliant interpretation of the art prompt for sure. Wonderfully done, Margaret. Wonderful addition to the show. And where are we going next, Barb?
We're going to a very short poem. It's called Yet Painted Still, An Inch Full Thick by Doc Juniors III. Why don't you go ahead and read this, Naomi, and then I'll give you the next one, too.
Okay. Yet painted still an inch full thick, the self-obsessive gaze remains the human craze. End poem. And wow, what a it's a short one. Like the title is almost as long as longer than the poem than the brevity itself. What did you think of this one, Ed?
You know, it's a compulsive desire for a wild experience in their living, and. It's within what they want to do. It's a craze, and it's you know, for the two liner, that's what I got out of it. It's a wild experience that they that it is painted in this poem.
I would have loved to see what prompt inspired it, but he didn't write the number of the prompt in. And, I would have loved to see that, you know, what prompt inspired him to write this little brevity, which is quite brilliantly and witty. What did you think, Barb?
Yeah, it may be brief, but it is packed full of wisdom and truth. We are all so self-obsessed, are we not? It's like that guy who just looked and was fascinated with his reflection in the pond. You know, humans are just all about themselves. And even as we read and interpret poetry, we bring our lens to read it. We don't ever read a single poem from the lens of the writer's, you know, quill. They can write what they want, but we always are going to read. We bring ourselves to the reading. We see ourselves in everything. And, you know, so often you're having a conversation with someone and you're not really listening to what they're saying. You're only listening enough so you can interject your experience of whatever it is they're talking about. And you're just trying to make that conversation swerve so it becomes all about you. I mean, not everyone is like that, but that just seems to be the human craze. I really do believe we're living in a very self-obsessed world right now, and it's, I think, in large part why we're in such turmoil. We've lost that whole sense of humanity and community and selfless servanthood. We need to get back to that. And in seven little words, he brought it right back to the forefront where I think it needs to be, because you can't solve a problem until you acknowledge a problem. So I really enjoyed those seven words, honestly.
And by you saying that, Barb, I know exactly now which prompt he wrote to. And it's the prompt where the girl is staring into the lake. She's staring at her own, I think.
Ah,
staring
sense.
At her own reflection in the lake. Yeah, and she's like, I'm absolutely sure now that that's the prompt he wrote to. So that's, thank you for bringing that up. It'll help me with my judging. And what will be our, well, I don't know if it'll be our final poem for the night, but we'll see. What will be our next poem?
Our next poem is Waiting to See You in My Dreams, My Forgotten Dream. Do you want to read that one, Naomi?
Okay, I love Forgotten Dream. Okay, Waiting to See You in My Dreams. Nighttime drapes the world in crushed velvets and dripping diamonds. I shudder to vexing days as interior doors to your cage creaks open, whispers of you sneaking out. We dance in the unbounded sky of dreaming mind, silken cheek rests against my head, warmth pulsing between bodies, laughs rain like sunshine over me, breath like sherbet, sunset. Sinking, clinging to every bit of you before morning's eventual prison. End poem. Wow, what a wonderful write that was. And what did you think of the write, Ed?
One of the stanzas I really liked is, we dance in the unbounded sky of dreaming mind, silken cheek rest against my head, warmth pulsing between bodies. It seems like a frustrating love with dreams, could be a secret love, or from a love from a faraway distance. It was, especially when it says, you know, the unbounded sky of dreaming mind, and that's what I got out of it. So. I enjoyed it. It was a lovely write, meaningful.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She Forgotten Dreams, she writes in such a way that, you know, it just gets you every time. Well, it gets me anyway. She has such a way with words. And what did you think, Barb?
Yeah, this was a really beautiful write. I love the line, I shudder to vexing days as interior doors to your cage creak open. It's like these are images that she has to keep caged up during the day because they're just too distracting. And so she only allows that cage to open at night. And honestly, except for one word, the word pulsing, if you take the word pulsing out of this poem, it would be such a sweet a remembrance of a mother and a child. And that's what I was imagining until the word pulsing. I dream of my kids as 3 to 6 year olds, even though they're still alive and well, and they're, you know, off to college and doing adult things. I still dream of them as innocent little kids. And I can totally feel that in this poem, except for that one word pulsing. But even putting that word pulsing in, just the romance of every night creaking open a cage door to let your passions out, to let a longing that you've kept bottled up all day to give yourself release and a little bit of sherbet. And that's the place where I also thought works so good, imagining a mother and a child where breath like sherbet sunset. I love that pairing of words, sherbet sunsets. That's just pure poetry right there. And then clinging to every bit of you before morning's eventual prison. So again, that whole thing, there's two prisons. There's the prison where she locks up this dreamy guy in her mind, and then there's the prison of real life that comes in the daylight. Really good write. Really, really well written. Lots of beautiful poetic techniques in here.
Absolutely. And I put up the prompt in the Brevity Writer's Room, the prompt that she wrote to. So you see the floating silhouette of the woman in the sky, and you see the cage also, like the prison, the bird cage.
Yeah.
You know, his hand is like pulsating on, you know, it could be, something, a body or thinking of her or something. But wonderful interpretation of the prompt for sure, you know, brilliantly written. And we have time for one last little one. So let's see what we have. What do we have, Barb?
We have Unconditionally by RJC. Do you want to read that one, Ed?
Sure. Unconditionally. We share intimacy like lovers. Every second felt forever. We gave and effortlessly ignited our fire vividly. The words, I love you, unheard, thou you let me feel I am loved. Grant me the words, like a song with vibrant chords, and love me, end poem.
Ah, what a sweet, loving poem all the way through. Oh, my gracious, this is absolutely beautiful. And, it's just, you feel there's a sensuality in here, you know, the intimacy like lovers, but there's also those so important words, I love you, unheard, though you let me feel I am loved. I love you is not always in the words, eh? It's more in how you show those words. And brilliant, right? What did you think, Barb?
This sounds like someone who was desperately wanting to get out of the friend zone. Because they share, because honestly, when you have a really good friend of the opposite gender, you can share things. If you personally are not feeling that fire, you share things at a really deep, open, intimate level, and they can interpret that as an invitation for intimacy. But it sounds like in this case, the one is not feeling it, the other is. And it's like we share intimacy like lovers. The words, I love you, unheard, though you let me feel I am loved. And he desperately, grant me the words. Give me the words. I want you to feel what I feel, and I will only know you feel them if you give me the words. So you can just feel his desperation to have his sense of intimacy shared by the person that he cares so much about. I really, really love this piece.
Mm-hmm. That's a great interpretation of the piece. And there's a lot of different kinds of love. And, I know I have a best friend of the opposite sex, and we've been friends for, I don't know how long. And, and we always say, I love you to each other. And, there's nothing else going on there. But, I see that now that you mentioned that. What did you think, Ed?
I
just say it real quick. From the photo, his love is for her in his heart right there. That's how he feels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you see that right in the picture, don't you? Absolutely, yeah. Unconditionally. Also in the title, unconditionally. And so this has been a great show, guys. Thank you so much for being my wonderful co-host. Welcome aboard again, Barb. It's so wonderful to have you. And
you're
such a great addition to the show. And thank you, Ed, for always being there. And Ed has our next contest up, which is he found a wonderful artist. I forget his name. What do you remember the name?
No, I can't remember.
Thomas something. And Thomas Ruz or something like
that.
And quote from Budo. So check it out, everybody. And so have a great rest of the week, everybody. And thank you so, so much for everybody who was listening in or will be listening later. And thank you so, so much for writing for the show. We so appreciate
you. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.